Hey, Amarillo, I'm Jason Boyette, and you're listening to Hey Amarillo, the interview podcast featuring some of the most interesting people and stories of Amarillo, Texas. Today's episode is supported by Pinnacle by Rock Rose, a new master-planned neighborhood being developed at Hollywood and Bell, south of Randall High School. It's located in the Canyon ISD and is the only neighborhood in Amarillo that contains schools from kindergarten to 12th grade. So a kid can start their education at Sundown Lane Elementary, then go to Pinnacle Intermediate, Randall Junior High, and Randall High School, all within just a few blocks of each other. As the neighborhood develops, it'll be full of open spaces and parkways, including a walkway that connects all the schools within the neighborhood. I've seen these plans and some of the featured homes, and it's a really exciting project by Rock Rose Development. So to learn more, visit pinnaclebyrockrose.com. That's pinnaclebyrockrose.com. And as part of this podcast partnership with Brick & Nail Magazine, I want to give a podcast shout out to Realtor Cindy Bulla of Realty Central Services and Vascular Surgeon Bradley Trinidad, MD of Northwest Physicians Group. Read the free e-edition of Brick & Elm's March-April 2024 issue at brickandelm.com. Today's guest is Gina Woodward, the Regional Director of America's SBDC in Amarillo, which is hosted by West Texas A&M University. Gina has been with the Small Business Development Center since 2008. She helps clients in the Texas Panhandle start and expand small businesses, and provides no-cost business consulting and low-cost training for those clients. In fact, when my publishing partner, Michelle McCaffrey, and I decided to launch our magazine, Brick & Elm, we scheduled a consultation with Gina. She was literally one of the first people we told about our idea. The SBDC offers one-on-one consulting and training and research services for all those clients. And so Gina and I talk about that. We talk about her work career, about the strength of small businesses here in the Panhandle, and why the SBDC is such a fantastic resource for entrepreneurs. Here's Gina Woodward. Gina Woodward, welcome to the Hey Amarillo podcast. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Jason.
I want to start with you the same way that I've started with all my guests, and that's to ask you why you're here in Amarillo. So what brought you to this area in the first place?
Wow, I don't know if I can answer what brought me here because I was born here and raised here and I never left.
Okay.
I was probably one of the many people in the area who had big plans to get away. I was originally going to go to school in the Houston area, and then I thought for sure, I would be living in a high rise in downtown Dallas and mm-hmm. have some kind of fancy, impressive job. And as I got older, I realized how much we had to offer here in Amarillo and really how much of an impact that I could have if I was able to stay here. And so I didn't leave. I've had job offers since then and mm-hmm. have come close to taking some other jobs that would have taken me away. And I just couldn't stand the thought of that. There's so much that has been done in Amarillo and so much that we still have to do. I absolutely love it here.
Okay. Maybe a better question is what has kept you here and how did you end up here? Tell me where you went to high school.
I was actually homeschooled.
Were you really?
So I didn't have the traditional high school experience.
Okay.
I
didn't
tell
know
people
that.
I have a reunion with myself every year, mm-hmm. every day actually.
Was it a positive experience for you?
It was. I think now, times have changed and I have my own son and I see the importance of being surrounded by your peers and mm-hmm. learning from them. That aside, I would be a terrible teacher, so that was not a route that I took for him.
Okay. I have talked to people who are homeschooled and wouldn't change a thing. And I've talked to others who say they feel like they missed out on some things socially, but the education was better. I've talked to all kinds of perspectives. So that's interesting to hear. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like you were able to gain something from it that maybe you would not have gotten in public school? Like, did you get through high school faster, or did you end up with a more well-rounded education?
I did. So I graduated a year early. I was actually 17 when I graduated. And there's definitely some things, especially back in the day, this was, date myself, the internet wasn't even a thing back then when I was in high school.
So it was an early homeschooling sort of experience
before
it really became a little bit more
Yes,
popular.
And so now kids have the opportunity to work in groups where you've got co-op teachers to teach, lessons like science and math that frankly none of us can know everything about.
Right.
But, you know, one of the things that I think I took away from that was just really a love of reading and peace, being by myself and learning. I love to learn. I'm working on my fourth degree, and that's not like something I say because I think like I'm impressive. I'd love to learn if you have the opportunity to learn. I think you should always take that.
The right personality, if you have that kind of personality, it can be a really, really good fit.
Yeah, yeah. If you don't, it would be a nightmare.
Right. Okay, so after you graduated early from Homeschool Academy, what did you do? Did you know what you wanted to do in terms of like college or career?
I thought that I did. So I wanted to be a forensic psychologist.
Okay.
I wish I could say that that was something that I had really researched it and I wanted it for the right reasons. Why I really wanted it is because I had a crush on someone else that was doing that. And I was thought, well, this is the thing for me to make him fall in love with me, clearly. So I actually pursued that, and I went down to Sam Houston State University in Huntsville. It's such a beautiful area. Went to orientation, and I got signed up for classes, and that was absolutely what I was going to do. And I got down there, and I realized that I was going to be, 10 hours from home, and that I was not going to have any kind of a safety net. I really didn't have people I could rely on to help with finances. I didn't have family in the area. And got a little bit scared and probably also realized that I wasn't pursuing that for all of the right reasons.
Okay.
And so I came back and I enrolled in Amarillo College and I spent almost 3 years there. I did all of my basics there like a lot of students did and got out. And I went ahead. I had already started that psychology degree. So I thought I might as well go ahead and finish that and got it finished. And I really enjoyed the program, and I love that area of study. But keep in mind, I'm 20 years old at the time because I graduated early. None of us are that bright when we're 20. I graduate, and I realize you can't really use a bachelor's in psychology. You've at least got to have a master's.
Right.
So I started all over again at the ripe old age of 20. And that is actually how I fell into business. None of it was planned, and I've been there ever since.
So by start over again, you started a new bachelor's level degree rather than going into a master's program.
Correct. I went ahead and thought, well, what the heck? I'm a glutton for punishment. I'm just going to get another bachelor's degree. And so I had never considered business, never once before, but I'm in this position. I'm 20 years old. I've got to figure out, you know, I got to pay my bills, keep a roof over my head. And what's going to do that? And I started taking marketing classes at WT and absolutely fell in love with it. And I wish that I could tell you that I was smart enough to have planned the psychology and the marketing background. I'm 20 years old. I wasn't that smart. Those two have worked together so beautifully throughout my career and into adulthood.
So you got a business degree, marketing degree from WT. A lot of people get a business degree and they end up going right into the business world, or maybe they have entrepreneurial dreams, or maybe they end up working for, you know, a bank or insurance company or something like that. So did you have an idea about what you wanted to do with that while you were getting degree number two?
I really don't sound too bright today because no, once again, I did not know what I wanted to do. Do any of us know what we want to do when we're in our early 20s? I had no plan for my life. Up to that point. So I had just gotten married and my husband at the time was about to take a job in Oklahoma. And I thought, well, I'm going to move to Oklahoma and I'm going to do something big in Oklahoma City. And I ended up seeing a job posted at WT with the Small Business Development Center. And I had vaguely heard of the SBDC before then, but didn't know much about it. And I applied and thankfully checked a few of the boxes for what they were looking for. And I started that career there in 2008. I was kind of the entry level position. Mm-hmm. I was the one up at the front answering the phones and putting together workshops. I got to do some of the marketing that I loved. And I really didn't think that that was going to be what I would do forever. I thought that was just until we moved off and I lived in a high rise somewhere. And I just fell in love with it, Jason. It's given me the opportunity to serve others in ways that I just never knew existed. so rewarding. And so here we are now. That was 16 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I've gotten to work my way up and do pretty much every job in the office. And I'm now the director and get to serve the entire panhandle.
So I want to hear a little bit, given that background, and since you've been involved with it since 2008, how has the SBDC changed since then? I know a lot of mm-hmm. things have changed in the business world. Some good, some bad. I know a lot of business is still just business. Mm-hmm. So have you seen some significant changes?
We've seen some real changes in the panhandle. One in particular that won't be surprising is since COVID, our office, but much of what our clients doing has shifted online. Mm-hmm. That obviously for all of us was an overnight shift and not something that everyone was prepared for. But we're really seeing a lot more clients since COVID. You know, we went through so much and it was such a scary time and we had people that were losing jobs. And so that's trickled down and we still to this day, this is what, 4 years post-COVID, we see people come in and they've got this existing skill. They're working for somebody else, whatever that skill, that trade might be. And I still see a little bit of that COVID fear in their mentality. They're not planning to leave their current employment, but they're trying to take that skill and turn it into their own business mm-hmm. that they can work at part-time. And they want that safety net right. that I didn't have in Houston. They want to make sure that they can have something that they can switch over and do in the event that we had something else drastic okay. like COVID. We've also seen a shift just in the types of businesses that are starting up. When I started at the SBDC in 2008, we would see a lot of retail, a lot of restaurants in the area. And this is not just Amarillo. This is the whole panhandle. All day, every day, we would see retail and restaurants. We very rarely see that anymore. It's a lot of those service-based businesses that maybe don't take as quite as much cash to start up.
Okay.
And again, tying into those existing skills. And we've got some incredible talent in the panhandle.
So One of my theories, and you can tell me if this is true or not, a lot of people have heard of the SBDC, don't really know what it is. Unless you've had the opportunity to use it, to rely on those services, like it might just be an acronym that sounds familiar to you, but you couldn't tell anybody, you know, what actually happens there. So mm-hmm. for listeners who maybe are in that position, like what's the spiel of what you do and how you help?
Sure. If I had to boil it down to three things, there's consulting, training, and research. What we're really doing most days is that consulting, and it's where we're working with people one-on-one to either start a business or maybe they have an existing business and they want to expand it or they're experiencing some kind of problem and they want somebody from the outside to look at it and help them. That's really what we spend most of our time doing. We do some training as well. Again, post-COVID, it shifted, and a mm-hmm. lot of that is online webinars. And then we do some research, some really cool research, Jason. Some of it we get to do in-house, and then we've also got access to a couple of research offices. My favorite research that we pull right now is really cool, really creepy, both at the same time. So we've got some software that aggregates cell phone data. Mm-hmm. Jason, I've got my tablet here. You've got your phone. I've got my phone. Whether we like it or not, everything that we do on those, it's all being tracked when you agree to those terms that right. not a single one of us reads. It's being tracked. And so I can't see what you, Jason, are doing, but I can see aggregate data. If I've got somebody that's interested in starting a business, perhaps at a certain location, or they have an existing business, and we're trying to figure out where are your customers coming from, where mm-hmm. are they going, how do they reach them, I can actually see 5% of them were at home before, or 10% of them were at Walmart, and then I can see when they leave there exactly yeah. where is it that they go.
It's and that's really data nice. That shows, okay, this phone has stopped connecting to a home Wi-Fi and is now hitting this tower. It shows that you're en route, and then it switches to another tower when you get a little bit further. That's what's happening?
It knows exactly where you're at, and it tracks who is at the business on a regular basis. So it knows that this is your house because you're here all day, so it knows who your employees are, and it actually excludes that data. Okay. It is really neat.
How do businesses use that?
So I'm actually using it with a business owner right now. We're considering a second location for him. And we've got a couple of different intersections that we're interested in. But for us, this particular business relies heavily on traffic at a very certain time of day.
Okay.
And we need a certain direction of traffic. So I was able to put pins on those intersections that we want to look at. And that's really what's helping us decide which one of those will be the most profitable.
Okay. Why do you have access to that? Is it because of the government side of the SBDC? Like what gives you access to that kind of data that I imagine a lot of companies would love to be able to use?
They do. And it's a database that anyone could subscribe to if they wanted to.
Okay.
I think our subscription was somewhere between $20,000 and $30,000 a year. I don't know about you. I don't have an extra $30,000 to pay for a database like that.
Generally, no.
Not top priority. So we're able to use our resources and pool that and use that for business owners all across the panhandle in West Texas.
Okay. Tell me about since we're talking about the government side of things, SBDC has that federal side. You're also related to WT. Like, tell me how those relationships work in this organization.
Jason, it took me probably 13, 14 years
okay.
to come up with an explanation.
So we've got about 30 minutes now.
Got that. It makes sense for people. So if you are a Big Bang Theory fan, mm-hmm. so you know that Leonard and Sheldon, all those guys are at, Caltech?
Right.
That's their university they work at. So that's me. I work for WT. My boss is the dean of the College of Business. But the funds that I receive are federal funds that come through the sponsored research office. So just like Leonard and Sheldon, they get their funds from NASA, whoever that might be.
Okay.
It goes through the university, and that dictates what they do, even though they are university employees. Exact same situation. My money comes from SBA in the state of Texas, but I am a WT employee.
Okay. The other question I want to ask is I would like for you to distinguish your side of things from the WT Enterprise Center, because I know that there's probably also a lot of confusion in the ways that those overlap or segregate themselves.
Sure. I think I can boil that down for us really easy. So on the SBDC side of things, we're doing the technical work on the business itself. It might be a business plan, cash flow projections, research, but it's the technical piece on the business. On the flip side, the Enterprise Center, one, they don't have the federal ties that I have. They belong wholly to WT, but their focus is more on the entrepreneur. You can think of them like a life coach for you as an individual.
Okay.
Jason, if you want help with Brick and Elm, that's where I'm going to step in. So we're working with a lot of the same people, but never duplicating services because one's working on the business, the other on the entrepreneur.
Okay. So now that we've clarified everything, everybody knows exactly how it all works. I'd like to hear just a little bit about maybe what your day-to-day or week-to-week looks like. And I know it's not going to be the same every day for sure, but you know, you've mentioned some clients, but give me an idea of the types of clients that you're working with, some of the different things that you're doing besides giving them access to the very valuable cell phone data. You know, what are some ways that the SBDC might have some local influence that we don't know, because you're coming at the very beginning with certain businesses?
Absolutely. Since everything we do is confidential, I generally can't name businesses, but can give you a really good idea about where we're at. So our center is assigned by the SBA to service the entire Texas panhandle. So we managed to do that. There are four-time staff members in the SBDC. And so most of our clients are coming to the office in Amarillo. I'll just tell you a little bit in general about some things we're working on. A coffee shop that is working to expand and kind of looking at some different locations for that across the region.
Okay.
One of my most recent clients that I had is starting a daycare in a rural town. Daycares can be tricky to start because there's a lot of workforce issues.
A lot of regulations.
Lots of regulations. They're doing such wonderful work, and I hate it, but they're not generating just tons of cash. There's a lot that goes into that. And so my role with that was helping them work with their local EDC, the Amarillo Area Foundation, as well as Texas Workforce Commission, to try to piece together that funding and the operations to make that work. Because those daycare, something like a daycare, is so much more than just a small business that affects that entrepreneur. The town that it's in, there literally is no daycare, and there's a huge workforce at another business, and we have people that can't go to work because there's nowhere to take their children. So we're really able to work with people and not just impact them as individuals, but impact an entire community through them.
And so I can see your value. In fact, we've used you with Brick and Elm. I can say that it's one thing to have a great business idea, but then there's a whole lot of stuff to do before you're in business or before you create a product or find customers. The idea stage is just the beginning of a lot of things that can be really complicated. And so that's where clients come to you. I mean, do you have a lot of clients who are just like, I think I want to start a business, but now what do I do? Yeah. What do I do next?
Right before I came to see you, that's what I was doing with a client. And he had this wonderful idea. I, as a consumer, think it's a fantastic idea. But we were able to sit down and work through like some legal issues with that he had never thought of, some distribution issues with that. I think sometimes one of the most valuable things that we get to do at the SBDC is just be that disinterested third party.
Okay.
Whether you decide to do Brick and Elm, it doesn't directly affect me. I was there to help you make the decision that was best for you and think of some things that you might not think of when you look at this project every day and it becomes your baby.
So you're not always just taking the role of cheerleader, encouraging somebody to go for it, because sometimes they need somebody to tell them, okay, rethink this part of it.
Absolutely. I think that's always some of the best wins that we have when we can save somebody from making a mistake. I want you to do what's best for you. And if you come in and I can help you work through that and you figure out maybe this won't cash flow or I'm going to have to pull all of my retirement to do it.
Yeah.
Oh, I have people that come in and they say that. If I can talk you out of pulling your retirement and making a mistake, that is a win for me.
Tell me about, since you have done this, you know, for 15 plus years, longer than that, like, what has it taught you about the people who live here? Like the pioneer spirit, the entrepreneurial nature, the creativity, has it helped you to understand this area better?
It has. And it's really what has kept me here is seeing that spirit of really service to others, not just in Amarillo, but in the surrounding community as well. Jason, I've had times where I've been sitting down with a client and we're working on their business. And I was not an industry expert in that field, and was actually able to call on other clients in the same industry. Mm-hmm. And even though they would be competitors, they have gladly shared information and helped that person. I just don't think that that's something that you find anywhere else. And that's all across this region in the Texas Panhandle, you see that.
I want to hear a little bit about you personally, why this has been such a good fit for you, especially to stay within the same organization, although you have moved up. There are a lot of people who have their own entrepreneurial ideas. And if you're good at helping other people start businesses, you might be good at helping yourself start something new, you know? And so I wonder, like, what has kept you in this role with all the access you have to how to do the thing that you're still in a service position?
You said it right there. What has kept me there is that this position, every single day, it allows me to serve someone in a new way. And there is just nothing better that you can do for yourself or your own mental health than to serve others. Whether it was with their business or a personal aspect, whatever that might be, being able to serve others like that, that's what's kept me there.
Okay. The last thing I wanted to ask you is about the diversity of the clientele that you have. Because from what I know, I think a lot of people just tend to think, you know, within their own mindset, and they think, oh, you know, it's going to be a lot of this kind of business or a lot of this sort of business owner. And you really are dealing with people from all over the Panhandle, all different walks of life, all different ethnicities and socioeconomic levels. So tell me a little bit about maybe what you've learned about the business community that might feel surprising to somebody outside that.
Absolutely. There's so much that goes on here that people don't know about. And Jason, I've got clients just all across that range, from the ones that are just like you and I right now, were sitting, you know, in a bedroom at your house recording this, and they work from home and they do quite well for themselves. I have multiple clients, though, based out of Amarillo who have businesses that in the next 5 or so years will probably sell in the billion-dollar range, mm-hmm. and that's billion with a B.
It's not the case with this business, but if anybody wants to make an offer, we can talk about it, right?
I'd like a cut of that for my participation if that happens. So, no, but we've got this incredible range of businesses. But again, going back to what we talked about, I've had this happen before. Those clients that I've had that have the businesses that they're running globally that they're eventually going to sell in the billion-dollar range, I've had that other client that's working out of their home, and we get stumped on something that I know the big client has expertise in. Mm. All you have to do is call, email them, and they are so, so glad to be able to help them. And I think it ties back to the same thing that I mentioned, the service to others. That's how they've grown those businesses in the Amarillo, is by serving others and working their way up, and they're glad to continue to do that. I just don't feel like if we were in a New York City, mm-hmm. that you're going to find those billion-dollar business owners that will give back to the people that are working from home.
Are there some specific challenges that this part of the country has within the business community that maybe that you see come up more often than other types of challenges?
You know, one of our challenges is just having the confidence. I think this is what I see in a lot of people, is having the confidence to reach out and grow your network. And it's a little more tricky here maybe than it would be in one of the larger metro areas, because for us, our network is going to have to extend out to the Dallas, the Houston, the San Antonio area. And that is totally fine. But it's having the confidence to make the connections to be able to do that. I might not know that person in Austin. You might not know that person in Austin. But I would be willing to bet that if that business owner at home needs to meet that person, one of us knows someone mm-hmm. who can connect them. So it's just being able to ask.
Okay. And then the last thing I wanted to ask before we close up this section is, this has put you in touch with a lot of startups, a lot of businesses that are getting developed, and has maybe extended your visibility within the community of successful people. And I know it's given you a lot of opportunity to serve in ways that are not necessarily within your job description, whether you're, you know, helping judge stuff at the Enterprise Center or doing things like that. And so, like, tell me some of the ways that your work has kind of spread beyond your work, whether it's volunteer service or anything like that.
Oh, I can do that. So my very, very favorite thing that I've gotten to be involved in is just helping to formalize the women's business networks that we have all throughout the panhandle. I wish I could say that it was this, you know, big formal 501c3, and there's talks about doing that, but it's been taking those people who work at home. I'll give you an example, and just matching them up with other people who can help. So it all started in 2019. That's when in Amarillo, Amy Henderson in mm-hmm. Amarillo, who's on the Governor's Commission for Women, she brought the Governor's Forum for Women to Amarillo for the first time. And so she and I got to co-chair that committee and put that event together. And the event itself was wonderful, but that event is what kicked out all of those women's outreach efforts all across the panhandle. And I remember in particular at that event, there were a couple of people, that's where I got to meet them, and we've become wonderful friends. Roseanne Mayer, Amanda Askew was there, and then of course Chandra Eggemeyer with the Office of the Governor, who are all actually from the Clarendon area. And so at that event, I learned that Amanda is a small farmer in Clarendon, where she raises goats, and mm-hmm. she sells soaps and lotions with that goat's milk that are all I use today. They are incredible. But she got to meet so many people at that event that have helped to build up her and her business and open new doors for her. And so we've kind of since taken that model and expanded it. We got to go to Roseanne's Hunting Lodge in Clarendon. Who knew that there was this amazing hunting lodge in Clarendon? I didn't know it before this event. And literally sit in the floor with these women and show them, this is how you use Google to get your business online and get people to find you. But that, since 2019, that has just grown and grown. And we now have this huge, just informal network of women all across the panhandle. And I think the best thing that's come out of that is that they're never in it for themselves. Mm-hmm. They're always in it to serve others and build each other up. And they've built some incredible businesses from it. So that's the very long answer to what you asked me about. But that is the thing that I have been most appreciative of being involved in.
And have you found that willingness to collaborate instead of always compete?
Every single time. Every time. Yes, not just in Amarillo. All across the panhandle. They love sharing each other's posts on social media, hosting events together, artisan events. They are genuinely there to build each other up.
This week's episode is also supported by Wick Realty. I've recorded every interview over the past year in my home studio. My family and I love our house, we love our neighborhood, and we're here because Wick Realty helped us sell our previous home and buy this one about 5 years ago. Wick is invested in seeing Amarillo flourish economically and socially for all groups of people. So if you're buying or selling, if you're building, if you're looking for investment property, even if you're a first-time homeowner, talk to Katie Wick or one of her outstanding agents. That's wickrealty.com, W-I-E-C-K. Okay, I'm back with Gina Woodward. Gina, this is the part of the show I call 8 Straight. 8 Straight is sponsored every week by Panhandle Plains Historical Museum and Canyon. It's the largest history museum in Texas, and it's known for its paleontology collection, including a bird-like Coelophysis, which was 8 feet long, weighed about 50 pounds, and 8 small reptiles. It lived in the late Triassic period around 200 million years ago, and the most common gathering of these was around Santa Fe, New Mexico. It's the state dinosaur of New Mexico. So you can see that fossilized skeleton. It's embedded in rock at panhandleplains.org. Okay, when you think of Amarillo 10 years from now, what do you hope for?
I hope that we have gone back to fully embracing our culture and all that we have to offer. Jason, you've lived here for a long time and you've seen the same things that I did. We had this weird preteen era for Amarillo where we kind of, I feel like, lost our identity and we felt like we needed to be another Austin, and we tried mm-hmm. to shed our Western heritage. We're starting to get rid of the Austin mentality and embrace our heritage again. But in 10 years, I hope we have fully embraced all that we have.
And I think at the same time that Western heritage became a little more popular within the culture too, rise of shows like Yellowstone and mm-hmm. stuff like that, that having embraced something that suddenly is popular doesn't feel like a good look. So I think it's an internal and external sort of event.
Yeah. We're 16 now.
Okay.
Western heritage is cool.
All right.
Yeah.
I think that's a valuable thing to look forward to and to keep building. Other than wind, what does this area have too much of?
I think we have too much cynicism about ourselves. And we feel like we, again, not to keep harping on those metro areas, we have this feeling like we have to go to the Austin or the DFW or the Houston to see things and make something of ourselves. We have, Jason, so, so much to offer here, not just in terms of our physical resources, but in terms of the people that live here as well. This is an incredible place. And I know it's really easy to say when you live somewhere that it's a unique area, and every area has something about it that's unique. But I have the advantage at the SBDC. We've got sister centers mm-hmm. everywhere, and I get to work closely with my peers, and we regularly talk. And I'm here to tell you, we legitimately are unique. We have things that other areas in West Texas don't have, and we have people who really want to give back like they just don't do in other areas of the state.
Is that maybe that intangible? We talk about the panhandle spirit. We talk about the people who live here all the time on this podcast. Mm-hmm. Like, is there something more tangible that you see that, you know, other people in your position are not seeing? And what is it?
I do. I don't know if I can put my finger on what it is, but I mean, I regularly talk to my peers in Lubbock. We have Midland, Odessa. We really do have those offices all across West Texas. And I'll sometimes in our meetings, you know, I'll tell them the story about, I had this client that I'm working on, but I don't have to call on the other centers for help. I can call on you, Jason, for help. I can call on their competitors in town and they will give us advice and feedback. And the other directors in this meetings will just kind of sit there with their mouths open. They don't have that in those areas. So
that
I don't
openness
know,
to maybe that's helping what each is. Other isn't always part of it.
Maybe that's what it is. But we legitimately do have something unique here.
Okay. That's good to know. Mm-hmm. What does this area not have enough of?
This seems really strange to say for a town that, you know, 100 or so years ago was still kind of the Wild West. But I think that we don't have enough of a sense of exploration. Mm-hmm. Again, not a tangible thing, but we have so much to see and to do across the panhandle. And the way that I've always looked at Amarillo Canyon, you know, I work in Amarillo and I live in Canyon, but the whole panhandle, we're really all tied together. We all rely on each other so much. So I don't ever segregate those areas. We have so much to do, so much to see. Did you know that if you go to Shamrock, St. Paddy's Day is coming up, Jason. We actually have a piece of the Blarney Stone there,
yes,
and you can
yeah.
go touch it. You can see the gas station that was the one that was modeled for the gas station in the Cars movie. You can go to Vega and go to the Milburn Price Museum if you've never been there. You need to go. So it's not like going to the Panhandle Plains Museum where they've got the big, impressive dinosaurs. And it's just filled with the coolest oddities from all across the Panhandle. And if you talk with Greg, the curator, he will walk you through and he will spend hours and explain everything in there. It's a wonderful way to spend an afternoon. You can go to the Hereford area. Did you know that we have a little mini POW Italian chapel
yeah.
that is literally in the middle of a cornfield, an actual cornfield? You have to drive down a dirt road to get to it. But I feel like when we're in the Amarillo Canyon area, we live in this bubble and we've not done a good job of exploring outside that bubble. I take my son Asher out on weekend trips all the time, and we go visit these things, eat at a local restaurant, find local fairs and events going on. You don't even need to take a vacation outside of the Panhandle. We right. have everything we need.
We just keep driving past. We go to Oklahoma
just
City,
stop driving.
Or we go to Santa Fe or someplace like that, and we should just stop a little bit earlier.
We have so much here, yeah.
Okay. What's one local nonprofit you personally appreciate?
I have to give a shout out to Square Mile. I'm sure that most of you know Brady and Donna, who've been running that for many years. At the SBDC, we've really gotten to work with them to help with economic development mm-hmm. and clients. And they're able to help clients that you and I can't communicate with well. There's language barriers and there's cultural barriers, too. Those are very real things. And Brady and Donna have done such a wonderful job of reaching out to those clients. They're just able to connect with them in ways that I'm not able to, but they really help them grow and learn about how to do business in Amarillo. And then they get them to the point where they can bring them to, it might be to the SBDC. It might be a big fancy bank building that was too intimidating
right.
for them before. And they're able to do business here and support their families. They've done so much to help grow Amarillo.
Yeah, that's one of those things I really do appreciate about Square Mile is that we've got a lot of great organizations that feed people. They help people locate services. They meet all these needs. But Square Mile does a lot of that stuff. But then they also help businesses get started. And they help people get over that hump of intimidation or whatever yes. it might be. And has resulted in some really strong local businesses.
It really has. We're very, very thankful to have them.
Okay, what's your favorite local coffee shop?
Oh, that's an easy one. So at SBDC, I get the pleasure of working with lots of different business owners. And I got to work with somebody, it's been a few years before COVID, they came in to open a coffee shop. And I knew right away they had what it take to make really good coffee. It helped that they brought me some coffee to mm-hmm. try. And so I helped them find a location, and it just so happened, Jason, that that location was two blocks away from my house. So my favorite coffee shop is Journey Coffee in Canyon.
Okay. Journey has been doing really well in a competitive coffee culture, for sure.
They are, and Noah and Stephanie are just two of the most amazing people.
Okay. What's your favorite local restaurant or food truck?
So I work in Amarillo and I live in Canyon. So I kind of have a favorite in each town since I'm splitting that time. So in Amarillo, My favorite is Girasol. I think Jessica is just the most talented chef in Amarillo. She did my whole birthday lunch last year with a special cake. She's catered for us at the office. She's so talented. And then in Canyon, I'd probably have to actually pick Creek House.
Okay.
Also right down the street from my house, partly for the food, but just partly for the atmosphere.
Yeah.
You get to go sit outside and, you know, play chess and beanbags. It's a wonderful place.
All right. What's your favorite local neighborhood?
I have to go with Wolflin. I love all things old and all things with charm. And I love to look at the houses from that standpoint. But I also love to look at those and, you know, think about it this, you know, 100 or so years ago, even more than that, when some of those were built. We've already talked about it. Amarillo was still a little bit Wild West then. Like, how cool is it to look at those houses and think that people believed in Amarillo enough that they built a house like that 100 years ago? Or there were probably cattle walking down the street.
Yeah, literally. I mean, it was a dairy farm.
It was.
They planted some of those elm trees on the sides of the roads that they laid out and had to water them with buckets and, you know, these water wagons and stuff. That kind of vision for it to have become what it is, like, that's a very panhandle sort of
pioneer spirit. I appreciate that, yeah.
Okay, when was the last time you visited the Big Texan? Speaking of small, successful businesses.
Okay, so we've already established this, Jason. I am from Amarillo Canyon area. And until last year, until 2023, I had actually never been to the Big Texan. I had also never been to the Cadillac Ranch until last year.
It's a long time to hold out.
It's 40-ish years. I guess as a local, I just assumed those things were for tourists. And the only reason I went is because I took tourists. I enjoyed myself immensely and will be back.
Okay. Did you figure out what the draw is then? Did you say, oh,
it's the West Texas thing, like we've talked about. People love that culture, and I get it because I love it too.
Okay. Well, that concludes the 8 straight questions. I like to close by asking my guests to endorse something. So what's one thing you would like listeners to know about or to experience?
I love this question so much. So, you know, we're still in the throes. As you and I are talking, it's the middle of March. We're still dealing with some wildfires on the east side of the panhandle. And I think one of the things that I most want to endorse is this year, probably July or August, there will be an event called Wild and Free on 83. It's an annual event that's been hosted all up and down Highway 83 on the east side of the panhandle. Mm-hmm. And if you're not familiar with Highway 83, you can start on it in the very southernmost tip of Texas, and it goes all the way up to Canada. So it runs through the Wheeler, Shamrock, Clarendon area. And all of those chambers, EDCs, Texas Trails Plain at the state level have gotten together to host an event every summer. You can literally drive the whole way through 83 up and down the panhandle, and you get to stop in those cities.
Right.
And every single one of them has some kind of an event going on, whether it's a market, it might be specials at some of the local retailers or restaurants, and they really get to show off their city. Did you know that just a few years ago, Wheeler actually put in a really nice pool and a splash pad? Like, it competes with the stuff that we have in the Amarillo area. So the last time that they did that event, I loaded up my son and my nephew. They were young, and we went all up and down, and we started our day in Canadian at the bridge.
Okay.
They had such a neat outdoor market, and there were just artisans scattered around all under the trees, and we did some shopping. We went to Wheeler. Obviously, they did some swimming and got in the splash pad and did some shopping, got to eat at local restaurants. We went to Shamrock. Obviously, you have to take your picture at the service station when you're in Shamrock. That is something that everybody needs to do this summer and really support those areas that have been hit hard by the wildfires. And it's a really good chance to just have a weekend vacation.
Okay. And to get out and see those areas that we drive past pretty regularly. Okay. Gina Woodward, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you,
Jason. I appreciate it. And that concludes the episode. I want to say thanks again to Gina for the interview. You can learn more about the SBDC at smallbusinessdevelopmentcenter.com. Thanks also to Pinnacle by Rock Rose, Wick Realty, and Panhandle Plains Historical Museum for supporting this podcast. Thanks also to Angelina Marie for editing the show. And I want to say thanks to you for listening. Those of you who listen, those of you who leave reviews on Apple Podcasts and other platforms, I love that too. This podcast exists because people listen to it. It takes a lot of work. It's not cheap to make. And the support from the community is one reason that I am able to continue to do it. So thank you for listening. I'm especially grateful to the local people who support it financially through patreon.com/heyamarillo. Hey Amarillo's executive producers include Patrick Burns, Katie Linger, Corey Burns, Wes Reeves, Jason Burr, Josh Wood, Barbara and Jim Witten, and Cindy Graham. This has been episode 345. My name is Jason Boyette, and I'll see you next week.